Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
They're calling it a permission to dream, giving young people with limited economic opportunities a chance to succeed and growing the middle class. It's a new partnership, and it's supported by the AFL-CIO. A big union win for nurses in Austin, Texas. And today on the show, it's Smart Local 25 in New Jersey and the Transportation Trades Department of the AFL-CIO. Welcome to the Monday, September 26th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. We have two guests on the show today. We're going to start things off with Joe DeMarc. Joe is the president and business manager of the Sheet Metals. That's the smart organization, Sheet Metal, Air, Rail, Transit. That would be Local 25 out of New Jersey. Website is smw25.net. And I'll tell you, here's a guy with a long history in labor. Joe DeMarc Jr. is a third generation sheet metal worker, deep roots in New Jersey. Started his career as a sheet metal worker at the age of 18. That's when he joined Local 10 in Bloomfield as an apprentice trainee. Became a journeyman at the age of 22. Started getting more involved in his union as a rank and file member. Volunteered for many union activities. And here's what happened. Local 10 became Local 28 in New Jersey and New York. That was going back to 1981. And then after 10 years, some consolidation took place and it became Local 25, and they cover northern New Jersey. During that time, Joe's leadership skills and his dedication to his fellow union members was recognized, so he started moving up the ladder. Started out as a member of Local 25's advisory board and assistant coordinator of youth-to-youth organizing, where he helped to recruit and train new apprentices. Boy, you think about it. When he started the trade at 18, it was right out of high school. So he's going right back to the schools and making sure we get more young people involved in the trade, especially sheet metal workers. He was then elected to the executive board. That was back in 89. Hired as an organizer in 96. In 2007, Joe was elected president and business manager of Local 25 and has served three consecutive terms. He's got a lot of hats on. He serves as chair of the Welfare Annuity and Vacation Funds, as well as the Joint Apprenticeship Committee. Let's see. He was elected vice president of the New Jersey State Building and Construction Trades Council. That goes back almost 20 years, in 2003. He's also elected a vice president of the New Jersey State AFL-CIO. He was also appointed by International as the head of the Training Institute Contest Committee. That goes back to March of 2010. A very fulfilled life, no doubt about that. We'll talk about indoor air quality. That's a big issue right now, especially with a lot of the money that's coming out of Washington to make sure we retrofit the HVA systems all across America, schools, businesses, non-union competition. We'll get into that, and we'll also talk about retention, recruitment, and retirement. Talked on the show on Friday with another member of the Smart Union, and the average age, and this was in central Indiana, was like 54, 55. Years of age. We got to bring that down, get more people in. By the way, there's a new website that Smart started about a month ago, and it's all about organizing. smartcareers.org, smartcareers.org. I'm sure Joe will have some comments on that. It's a comprehensive, accessible tool that enables the union to bring new workers into the unions. Also, recruit contractors who will hire union members and provide self-starters with accurate information about how to join or form a union in the industry and beyond. Very active union, no doubt about that. Greg Regan will be joining us later in the show. He's one of our longtime regulars, and he is the head of the Transportation Trades Department of the AFL-CIO, TTD.org. The big issue, what's going to go on with that tentative agreement that was announced a couple of weeks ago for the railroad workers? And from what I've been picking up, there is a grassroots movement of railroaders who believe union leaders kind of sold them down the river. They did get a lot, but apparently not enough. And, you know, this goes on all the time. There's going to be unrest. Not everybody. You're not going to get 100%. You just got to get, what, over 50? 50.1. And we should be getting some indication on how that's going to pan out shortly. I'm sure Greg might have an update on that. We're also going to get into two-person crews. The Railroad Administration has just extended the deadline for two-person crew comments to December 2nd, and there are already more than 10,000 comments received. Most of the comments are from workers who shared personal examples of how important two-person crews are. A train with one person. I don't even want to go down that road, or track in this case. We're also going to get into cargo preferences. There was a congressional hearing on cargo preference. This was just last week, where one of their union presidents, Don Marcus, we've had Don on the show. He's with the Masters, Mates, and Pilots. And he testified on behalf of all maritime labor. And apparently there's a new report out by the General Accounting Office on cargo preference. And the report is consistent with what labor unions and workers have been saying for years about the need for greater enforcement requirements and compliance oversight. Federal cargo preference is an essential underpinning of the U.S. maritime industry, and it's vital that federal agencies, including USAID, are complying with the law. And pretty much the report reflects the need for the strictest possible enforcement of the Biden administration's Buy America policies across the maritime industry. So we'll get into that and more with Greg Regan as our second guest right here on America's Workforce. Now, a labor news update. This segment brought to you by the good folks at Boyd Watterson Asset Management, BoydWatterson.com. Well, the AFL-CIO last week announced a groundbreaking new partnership with the Chris Gardner Foundation's Permission to Dream program, which puts students with limited economic opportunities on an early path to the middle class. This is great stuff. Fred Redman, who is the Secretary-Treasurer of the AFL-CIO, and Chris Gardner, founder of the Chris Gardner Foundation, officially kicked off the partnership at two schools in Detroit. And they did this along with Randy Weingarten, who is the president of the American Federation of Teachers and the National Building Trades. They had a couple of reps from the National Building Trades. Through the collaboration, the Labor Fed and affiliated unions and partners will give students in disadvantaged communities the opportunity and support to enter paid, registered apprenticeship programs in the building and construction trades. This is what Fred said. We are thrilled to partner with Chris and his foundation to give more young people the opportunity to build family-sustaining careers. Far too many young people do not feel hopeful about their economic futures, and that is not acceptable. By expanding access to our world-class apprenticeship programs, we will ensure that young people entering the workforce can experience the security and support of a good union job. That's Fred Redman speaking. North America's Building Trades Unions, better known as NABTU, the AFT, American Federation of Teachers, the UAW, auto workers, school administrators. How about this? The NFL Players Association, my union, SAG-AFTRA, Screen Actors Guild, and ULICO. All of them are founding partners of the Permission to Dream collaboration. The program will be piloted in select cities and schools across the country where there will be an influx of funding for infrastructure and development projects, as well as jobs stemming from the passage of the bipartisan infrastructure law and the CHIPS Act. Got a comment here from Liz Schuler, president of the AFL-CIO. She said the labor movement's apprenticeship and training programs are second to none. We prepare thousands of workers every year so they have the skills to meet the needs of our changing economy and take on new opportunities. This collaboration will harness our union's world-class training and apprenticeship programs to provide new pathways to the middle class for students from underserved communities. This bold and dynamic initiative is about taking action. Action to lift up the next generation of union members. Action to provide hope for a better future where it's most needed. And action for forward progress in the fight for equality for all future workers and their communities. This is great stuff. And if that name rings a bell, Chris Gardner. Do you remember the movie Pursuit of Happiness? It's a great movie. Will Smith portrayed Chris Gardner. Great movie. If you haven't seen it, do check it out. But we are in the process of trying to get Chris on the show to talk more about this because this is great. The guy is extremely successful, pumping a lot of money into this. Or just Google Permission to Dream and you'll know exactly what I'm talking about and what he is trying to achieve along with the AFL-CIO and a number of unions. That's great that they got the football players union involved as well. Good stuff here. Really good stuff. Also, we got a great news out of Austin, Texas. The 800 nurses at the Ascension Seton Medical Center in Austin have voted overwhelmingly. What's overwhelmingly? 72% yes to form a union with National Nurses United. Nurses said they organized to win improved patient care standards and strong contracts. And now, this medical center is the largest private sector hospital in Texas to form a union. In Texas, a right-to-work state. These union members are the latest example of a growing movement among nurses organizing in southern states like North Carolina and Florida. Giovanna Hill is an RN in the renal unit. She said, "This victory, well, it's just the beginning. As nurses, we always have and always will stand committed to providing the highest quality of care for our patients. We are more than ready to win a strong first contract, which will help with nursing staff retention." Another issue that's plaguing the healthcare industry. Nurses, just like teachers, they are burned out. Front lines during the pandemic. Now, they're getting compensated, especially RNs are getting compensated. But you know what? After a certain time, the money's great, but your health is certainly more important. And the stress that they've encountered, my gosh. So congratulations to the 800 nurses at the Ascension Seton Medical Center in Austin, Texas, voting 72% in favor to form a union with National Nurses United. All right, quick break when we come back. Joe DeMarc of Smart Local 25 out of Northern New Jersey.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans, and we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers, and we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO.
Buildings, bridges, skyscrapers, and more. Structures that are the face of our cities and towns were built by members of the Ironworkers Union. That's why it's important that our workforce of over 130,000 ironworkers continues to be the safest and best trained in the field. With 154 training centers, we invest over $90 million annually in safety and training. We're growing the next generation of union ironworkers. There are so many reasons to put your trust in our ironworkers and their employers. Learn more about us at ironworkers.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter, AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oh.aft.org. Let's go to Northern New Jersey right now and join Joe DeMarc. Joe is the president and business manager of Smart Local 25. SMART's an acronym for sheet metal, air, rail, transportation workers. And they came up with that title about 10 years ago. But started out as a sheet metal worker. And Joe, congratulations in order here. 42 years on September 8th. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Union member.
18 years old. Okay, you got to talk to me about that part of your life. You decided to go right into the trades right out of high school then, I take it?
Well, I actually signed up for a county college, and I didn't follow through with it. And my dad told me at the time, you're going to work. Party's over.
Party's over. So was your dad a sheet metal worker?
Yes, he was. I'm actually third generation. My two uncles were, my dad, previous business manager, and now myself. Yes.
Okay. So. And that was at the time, what, Local 10, and that became Local 28, and now you're Local 25. So a couple of name changes there, but you hit the ground running here. Talk to me. When you got involved, here's your 18 years of age. And you go into the apprenticeship program. What was going through your mind back then? I mean, is this something, did you like it right away? Were there some bumps in the road? Talk to me about that part.
Oh, there was bumps. No, actually, I was living down the shore, having a great summer, and thought I'd be going to college. That didn't work out, so I started right away in the trade. And, you know, at first, it was a culture shock, like from high school into working, and we're working overtime, doing the casinos in Atlantic City, fabricating metal for the ductwork for a lot of casinos, and we're working a lot of hours, 10, 12 hours a day, 6, 7 days a week, and it was pretty much of a shock. And, you know, through that time, my apprenticeship, I grew to really like the trade, because from making a flat piece of metal into just about anything, was pretty interesting. A lot of geometry involved. And, you know, over the course of the 4 years apprentice training, I grew to like it even more. So it was, and bumps in the road, yes, because work was slow. It was not always busy. And at times, you know, you're laid off and you have to figure it out.
Yeah.
Figure out how could I make myself more valuable so I don't get laid off.
I see.
So that's where it was.
What about going up the union ranks? I was reading earlier about your leadership skills, and obviously there was something about Joe DeMarc that others recognize, and you started, you know, really getting involved in your union, taking on more roles. Can you get into that part?
Sure. So, you know, I thought at the time, working with the tools for 16 years, I said, you know, I need more of a challenge, and I always looked up to the full-time officials in the local, and I thought, how do I get that? How do I get there? So I was picking another an international rep spraying, Dan Pascanucci. And I said, I want to become, you know, get involved in local union politics. He said, go to school. So he gave me information about Cornell, the industrial labor relations courses. I got involved in that, started taking the courses during the week at night and on Saturdays, which led to a couple summers up at Cornell in Ithaca. And I really learned to appreciate the labor movement more, a lot of labor history, labor law. And from that, I got involved in my local union, volunteering anything I could.
Mm-hmm.
Picket lines, labor walks, anything, any extracurricular activity I did. I really enjoyed it.
Cornell is one heck of a school. We did a show a couple years ago with J.C. Treader. J.C. Was the president of the NFL Players Association, and at the time he was playing for the Cleveland Browns. And you could tell in that conversation how labor intensive he became as a result of going to Cornell. I take it, do a lot of people in positions like yourself go to Cornell to get the that labor acumen, so to speak?
Well, no, not a lot do. So we have Rutgers in New Jersey. They offer that. I took a few courses there. A lot go to Rutgers, attend Rutgers Labor Relations. Our international also used to sponsor with the George Meade Labor Center.
Mm-hmm.
We used to go down there for classes a week at a time. So, you know, our international is really heavily involved in education for all sorts of, not only labor history anything you can imagine.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Joe, you got a lot of hats. I see you're elected vice president of the New Jersey State Building Trades Council, also vice president of the New York State AFL-CIO. You got a lot on your plate. There's no doubt about that.
New Jersey AFL-CIO.
Sorry about that. Yeah. And let's talk about the situation right now with the work. You got a lot of money coming in on the Infrastructure and Jobs Act. And I want to talk about what you see as far as preparing for that. I know you spend some time organizing, and I know SMART, and I just noticed this too, SMART International has this organizing website called smartcareers.org. I want to touch on organizing. You want to bring some of those non-union sheet metal workers over. But what about getting young people involved? And I raise this question because, Joe, you know, all right, Joe, let's be honest. We're not young anymore. And a lot of people in the trades are the same way. I mean, average age, I was talking to a fellow on Friday, it was like 54, 55. What are we doing to get more young people involved in the trades, especially the sheet metal workers?
You know, that's a great question. we target the youth right from high school. So a lot of times, a lot of families want their children to go to college, right?
Yeah.
And college seems like a great career path, but not for all. College, you know, two things. Maybe they're not interested, the youth, or their family, they can't afford it. I mean, let's face it. I speak from experience. I put my daughter through 4 years of university college, and that was no easy task. I'm still paying, you know, loans for that. But a lot of the youth today want to get involved where they can work with their hands, and not just their hands, it's their hands and their mind, and they see the end product. So, you know, we encourage through vocational schools, and right out of high school, we have Career Day. So we invite the high school people in, the Vo-Tech people, and there's a big interest. I've seen it spike in the past 5 years for trades. And honestly, the return on investment for this at the end of 4 years, I mean, you earn while you learn, which means they go to school during the day. They go a week at a time, four times a year, and we negotiate with our contractors. This wouldn't be possible without our contractors. We have a joint labor management. We negotiate with them how, you know, when they invest in their apprentice and these apprentices that – at the end, they're talented, skilled, trained people. And they don't owe a tuition at the end of 4 years. They're out, and they hit the streets running.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful thing.
Joe, I'm just wondering, with the high cost of college, are a lot of young people, and this is your opinion, obviously, are they saying, you know what, I don't know if it's really worth it. Maybe I should get into that program where I can earn while I'm learning. Is that happening at all in your area?
Yes, it is. Absolutely. Some get into our trade and they have other offers, firemen, police, some leave. I mean, the retention is tough and it's always a work in progress. But a lot of times we have kids that start in college and they say that's not for them, and they come into the trades. They inquire, and we interview them, and they're in the trades. So, you know, we just recently, we have sketching. We do drafting and sheet metal.
Yeah.
So we just recently are working out a program with NJIT. It's a technical college for engineering, and we offer to draft some of their engineers into our sketching programs, and we start them out, and our starting salary is close to $100,000 a year when they become full-time journeymen. So we're working out right now, we're finalizing right now how to create this. So we're partnering with NJIT, which is a great thing.
Mm-hmm.
And not only with the apprentice programs, a lot of times a lot of trades, not just sheet metal work, not just smart workers, but if I'm speaking for smart, we offer business associates degrees with their apprenticeship programs. So we join up with whether they're county colleges or state colleges. So we offer that as well.
Mm-hmm. See, that's the part a lot of people don't understand. And I reference, you remember when just about anybody could fix a car. Okay. Remember that time, Joe?
Yeah.
It
is. Not these days.
Yeah, not these days. No. You really, I mean, you got to know computers. You got to know electronics. I mean, very similar in the trades today, especially, okay, HVAC, very complicated systems. All right. And the sheet metal work. And I think if by painting the picture, you mentioned like this business associate's degree, it's different today. There is a degree of college involved. And I think people need to know about that because you got that element. You got the fact that, hey, you know what? I'm making money right away and I'm not going to have any college debt. That's a whole different right. picture, isn't it, Joe?
That's a home run. Absolutely. It's just with the technology in our industry, all industries, but in sheet metal, technology is really taking over. Yes, it does. There's a thought that, well, it kills jobs. Well, yes and no. I mean, but when you train with computers, and we have a lot of computer technology in our industry, that opens up another position. And if you don't, you're on the outside looking in. You know, this is the way life goes on with technology, and it's really incredible. I've seen the changes over the decades with technology, but every time there's a threat, we're threatened by technology. It's a new task. We figure it out, and we create more jobs that way.
Exactly. Exactly. Embrace the change. Joe DeMarc right. joining us on our live line. He is the president and business manager of Sheet Metal Workers Local 25, part of the Smart Union. SMW25.net is their website. By the way, they have about 700 active members, a total of 1,600 when you count in the retirees. They got a very active retiree bunch, and they're based in northern New Jersey. And you said you go into some of the suburbs of New York City. Did I hear that correctly before?
Oh, no. We are a suburb of New York City. We're just outside of New York City.
Okay.
Right across the river.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, New Jersey, New York. I know they couldn't even figure out the football teams over there. So, see, it's the New York Jets, but they're actually in New Jersey. Okay. We're not going there. Greg Regan will be joining us later in the show on behalf of the Transportation Trades Department, the AFL-CIO. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Hello from the Communication Workers of America, District 4. We are a labor union representing a vast array of workers in different industries, including the Association of Flight Attendants, Telecommunications, CWA Passenger Services, Public Health Care, and Education Workers, the IUE, CWA Industrial Division, the National Association of Broadcast Employees, the CWA News Guild, not to mention our growing digital sector, and many others. If you're interested in organizing your work group or learning more about what it means to be CWA strong, visit our website at www.cwad4.org. That's cwad4.org.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, here's what you do. Just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so please keep them coming. Let's go back to our live line, rejoin Joe DeMarc on behalf of the sheet metal workers, Local 25. Again, the website, smw25.net. Joe, I want to talk a little bit about your competition, non-union competition. As you know, there is a lot of organizing going on. And I'd like to hear from you as far as maybe converting some of those non-union operations, bring them over to the right side, the bright side, from the dark side. What's your take on that? Is that happening in your area?
Oh, yes. We're SMART is heavy into organizing. Absolutely. Years ago when I first started back in, as an organizer in 96, that's what I have done for 2 years, and it's tough. It's not easy, but now, as opposed to years ago, people want to be organized. A lot of unions, people are interested in unions. Take the Amazons, the Starbucks, across the nation. Those are the two that you really hear. But in the building trades, it's prevalent. It's not easy, but what we do offer is skilled training. We offer that apprenticeship training and or journeyman night courses. What we find is union versus non-union. The union is skilled. We're able to mobilize the manpower for the contractors, and that's very important. In addition to that, we offer great benefits. We not only offer the health care benefits, which is major medical, dental, prescription, vision. We also offer vacation plans, pension, and self-directed annuity funds. I mean, so it's from cradle to grave, literally.
Yeah.
What I think the non-union contractors do is, I think they like to control and maybe through fear, like don't join the unions, they have nothing to offer. And honestly, it's about a difference. In New Jersey, it's probably more, but the national average is about $18,300 less than working for a union contractor in the sheet metal trade. It's a huge difference.
So, Joe, with that being said, how's the workload right now? I'm hearing from various people that have positions like yourself, that, hey, you know what, I'm getting a little worried because I can't find enough workers for the job. Is that pretty much the case in northern New Jersey there, that area?
I think that's a concern across the country. However, with our international, we have mobilization programs. We have a SASME call where we there's money for traveling, arrangements for hotels. A lot of these a lot of plants and a lot of nuclear plants and some of these battery plants that have a call in for manpower. Our international and our local unions are able to mobilize manpower lightning speed fast.
Mm-hmm.
So although we thought, you know, it comes up as a problem, we stay in the solution, we solve the problem, and our mobilization with our international is second to none. We are able to fulfill these job requests.
That's good to hear. Joe, if you don't mind, I want to spend a few minutes on air quality, because I know your union, Smart International, has been very, very vocal on making sure we do a better job when it comes to indoor air quality. I mean, you've got schools where kids are not breathing fresh air. It's obviously causing learning difficulties. I mean, businesses the same way. And you think about all the construction that goes back. People are working in buildings and warehouses going back 40, 50, maybe 100 years in some cases. And those systems have not been upgraded to the point of where they should be today. Can you talk about, well, you can speak to your local 25. You got a lot of buildings in that area, New York City, New Jersey area. Where are we with that program right now, Joe?
Okay, so let's start with this. Hospitals have been doing this for a while with a lot of airborne particulates. Hospitals have been big in this, and we have NEMI, National Energy Management. And NEMI is like the scientific end of the industry, where it drills down on, for instance, children in schools, the proper temperature, the right setting, hospitals with the over the operating rooms. They don't want any airborne particulates getting in. And I think this came to light when it started with SARS, probably even before SARS, which morphed into COVID-19,
mm-hmm.
Right? So a lot of times the indoor air quality, not just for hospitals, schools, public buildings, this is a big thing. It's a big thing nationwide, probably worldwide, actually. And what we want to do is make these buildings safe buildings. Right now, we refer to them as sick buildings because the airborne pathogens in the buildings are not good. They're not healthy for people who are working or visiting them. We have complete changeovers for school systems right now in this state we're working on, with particularly in the Senate and the Assembly getting legislation to change up these rooftop units, these big air handler units, and we're changing over what we call the MERV system. The MERV system is like when you go the MERV 13 and up. It definitely has an effect, and it catches a lot of the airborne pathogens. When you have up to a MERV 17, it's 99.97%. That it catches all these particulates, which is very important in hospitals, in schools. So, you know, we're working hard. And when you change the MERV filter systems, you also change the rooftop systems. You have to go to a stronger rooftop air handler that can handle this. And then you change the complete ductwork system with this. So there's a lot of money that we're waiting from the federal, also state, to help fund this program. And this is huge. This is a huge hit. It's not just doesn't only create jobs. It keeps our children, it keeps people in the buildings safer. You know, less sick days, more production out of not only the students but the workers. This is big.
Yeah.
Really, it's a big thing.
Joe, I get the sense this is being pushed by, well, federal and state governments. This is not something that the landlords, let's be honest, they're the ones that are running things in these buildings, especially when it comes to businesses. It's not something that they're doing. They got to get a nudge. They got to get some of those funds from the governments in order to make this happen.
Absolutely. A lot of the people who own the buildings, they're reluctant because this is a huge cost factor involved. A lot of people in general with mechanical systems, they don't see it. They don't see, you know, if it's above the ceiling, they don't believe in investing in it. If it's aesthetics, they like to see the end results. With the grants, the government grants and legislation, it's going to go this way, starting in public buildings. Private buildings are a little tougher.
Mm-hmm.
But you also have the pharmaceuticals, too. We have a lot of pharmaceuticals in New Jersey. And the big pharma they're all changing to these systems. So the MERV stands for Minimum Efficiency Reporting Value. And it's just these systems that are studied by ASHRAE, a national standards, these are the systems to go with. And this is so important for everyone in these buildings.
It's funny you mentioned pharma. Pharma could probably fund this alone. They don't even need the federal government. They got so much money because of the drug prices in America today. No doubt about that. Joe, great job today. Anything else you'd like to add to the show? We're speaking with Joe DeMarc, president, business manager, Smart Local 25 out of northern New Jersey and suburbs of New York City. Anything else you want to leave for our listeners as we move on?
Well, I would just like to, for the listeners, especially the younger listeners, consider the building trades. Whatever trade, a lot of people aren't familiar with sheet metal workers, right? They're familiar with plumbing, electricians, carpenters. But the sheet metal workers, the trade, all the trades, it's a great thing. It's a great return on investment. And the parents, you know, they think that it will be successful if their children attend college, which is probably a great, you know, argument. But the building trades, too, it provides a great, respectful retirement. So I encourage, you know, the youth out there to look into the building trades, especially smart sheet metal workers.
Good
and
advice.
Thank you for your time.
You got it. Anytime, my friend. You take care, stay in touch, and congratulations on those 42 years, okay?
Oh, thanks again. Be well.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Greg Regan heads the Transportation Trades Department of the AFL-CIO, and he's coming up next.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Hi, this is Liz Schuler, president of the AFL-CIO, and I am a huge fan of Flash and America's Workforce Radio and podcast.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our Raising Wages agenda, go to AFLCIO.org.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit SurveyandBallotSystems.com to learn more.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency. You can find more at ulagency.org. Let's go to Washington right now and join one of our regulars. That would be Mr. Gregory Regan, who heads the Transportation Trades Department of the AFL-CIO, TTD. .org, collection of three dozen unions dealing with everything that moves in America, whether on land, on sea, in the air, you name it. Greg Regan, how are we doing today, my brother?
I'm good, Flash. Thanks for having me.
All right, let's talk about this rail deal. We have a tentative agreement, and this is interesting. I was talking to Greg here before we went on the air, and I assumed that we would be getting some results. Boy, am I wrong. What's the process on this, Greg?
Well, look, there's every union has its own process, and it's all dictated by their constitution. So in some cases, there are going to be, you know, public question sessions or public information sessions that will have to be done.
Mm-hmm.
In other cases, the ballots are out. And in two cases, it's been ratified by two of the unions. So, you know, it'll be over the next couple of months, we'll start seeing the results from all the unions here.
So you're saying probably not till like December before we know anything then?
We will know some, for some of the unions, we'll know results within the next few weeks. I think December will be the time when we'll know everything.
Okay.
Or potentially mid-November, too. I think mid-November might be our best bet.
Wow. Well, we're dealing with 12 unions, so yeah, this is not easy. Not easy, you know, everybody's not going to agree on this one. So, all right, well, we'll just wait for the results on that one. In the meantime, talk to me about these the fight over two-person crews. This is ridiculous. I can't even believe we're having this conversation, but what's going on here, Greg?
Yeah, well, so, you know, this was an issue that the railroads have been trying to force to the bargaining table, actually, for a while, which is to try to bargain to allow them to go to one-person crews on these massive freight trains. You know, we're talking three-mile-long trains and have one person operate them. Fortunately, you know, that was thrown out. That was not forced to the table. And, in fact, just recently, the Federal Railroad Administration issued a proposed rule that would make this, you know, mandate two-person crews on all freight trains. And for us, that's where it should be. This should be a safety regulation. That's it.
So, Greg, I'm reading, I guess a lot of people are being very vocal on this, and there's comments that can be made. Can you tell us where, I mean, who's involved in making these comments right now? Can anybody make a comment and say, hey, come on, two-person crews are needed? Is that happening?
Oh, yeah. Anybody can make a comment. This is a public rulemaking, and, you know, I think that most people should care about this issue, too. These freight trains run through just about every community in America. And if they don't operate safely, it can potentially put anybody at risk. So I would love to see more of the general public supporting a safer rail system by supporting two-person crews. And, you know, the comment period is, I think they just extended it. So it's going to be open for another, I think, 40 to 60 days. So there's plenty of opportunity for everybody to go out there and support rail workers here.
So should we just go through the website, ttd.org, and make that comment? Is that the best advice here?
Yeah, go to the TTD website. It'll end up going through the public docket and through the Department of Transportation. But we can you'll have all the information you need on our website.
So, Greg, let's move on to cargo preferences here. This is a maritime section, and this one here needs a little explaining. Apparently, one of your presidents, Don Marcus, great guy. He testified recently on behalf of all maritime labor, and I guess Congress is looking into this issue. Can you explain what's at stake here, Greg?
Yeah, I think the fact that we have so much of the international, ocean-going shipping is controlled by basically four companies, they're all foreign-owned. I think that undermines our competitiveness in the U.S. And cargo preference is one of the few tools that we have left to try to support U.S. flagged, U.S. crewed shipping. Basically, cargo preference at its core means that when the government is going to pay to ship cargo, that it's done on U.S. flagged vessels with U.S. crewed mariners. It's a pretty simple tool, but one that makes sure that we have some semblance of a U.S. Flight fleet so that we actually can have that around, that we can rely on it if there's a need, if there's an international emergency or domestic emergency where we need a U.S. flight fleet to move cargo.
Well, what I understand, there's an enforcement problem here, not enough, and things are happening that shouldn't be happening. Can you give us some details on that or some examples of what's going on right now in maritime?
Yeah, I mean, in general, there are a lot of, this is true in a lot of situations in the government, including like Buy America, for example, where there are people in agencies who just think this is just a headache. We don't, you know what, this is a some stupid law that we shouldn't have to comply with.
Yeah.
But it really is harmful, and it undermines the purpose of this program, because, you know, we require our military, our international aid organizations, they all rely on U.S. flag fleet to deliver goods, and we don't want to have to rely on foreign companies to provide that sea lift capacity. We want to be able to do it ourselves. That's a plain and simple security issue. So, you know, one of the issues is people will look at the bottom line and say, well, it's cheaper if we do it with foreign vessels. Well, of course it's cheaper. They have, you know, most of these foreign shipping companies are flagging in countries where there's very little, if no, labor laws, no safety standards. And, you know, why would we want to, as a, you know, the most powerful nation in the world, why would we want to help reinforce those types of terrible safety standards in international shipping? And so it is a problem, and it's one that I think we should really take seriously if we want to start growing and competing internationally when it comes to ocean maritime.
Now, you had a congressional hearing on this. I see it was on September 14th. How did that go? Was it pretty cordial? You think you might get some action on this?
Yeah, the laws are on the books. And by the way, Don Marcus did great. He really knocked it out of the park in terms of explaining this issue and presenting our case in front of Congress. So in this, I mean, look, the laws are, as I said, on the books. So it is a matter of just education and oversight.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, explaining to people that this isn't just a dollar and cents issue. This is, there's a lot of economic and national security issues involved with it. Making sure that people understand sort of why these laws are in place in the first place. And yeah, I think that we will see some movement. Ultimately, what I'd like to see is make sure that we don't have, for example, 70% of goods need to be shipped on U.S. vessels. I'd like to see 100% down the road.
I hear you.
But I think that's going to take a little bit of work for us to get there.
To your point, there are laws on the books. We just got to enforce them. I mean, we're not talking about new laws here. Use the laws that are on the books. Okay, we got a couple of minutes left here. I saw a news clip last week where a passenger on a flight, I don't recall which airline it was, but he decided to get up out of his seat and he just smacked the flight attendant, smacked him. And I understand this individual is now banned from flying on future flights. And this is an issue that's ridiculous. And it seems like the last couple of years, I know there's a lot of frustration out there with the pandemic and all that. But we've seen bus drivers get assaulted. I just mentioned the airline situation. I don't know what else can be said or done on this. We do have laws on the books. This guy's banned. What's your take on what I mean? Why are we talking about this? I don't get it, Greg.
Well, we need more examples like this one. Unfortunately, we need people that are to recognize what the consequences are going to be, whether it be, you know, a lifetime ban from flying, or making sure that the full force of federal law is used to prosecute these people, and that includes, you know, major fines. It includes jail time. There's, we need to make sure that people recognize that there are going to be serious ramifications. I think for whatever reason, there is a portion of the traveling public who've decided that the people who are responsible for getting them safely from point A to point B are double as punching bags.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened there. I don't know where people felt this was okay. But the only way you're going to start to see this turn around is that, you know, by and large, everyone recognizes there is going to be, I face real consequences if I do something like that.
Yeah.
And I think that's enforcement and federal prosecution is the biggest way we can hopefully turn this around.
Well said, my man. Greg Regan, president of the Transportation Trades Department of the Labor Federation. TTD.org is the website you want to go to. You take care, stay safe, and we'll talk to you next month. Okay, brother?
Thanks, Flash. Talk soon.
All right. Tomorrow, we have our independent labor voice, Tom Buffenbarger, joining us and the building trades in Los Angeles. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio podcast. Thanks for listening. And be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.